Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents I Took the Only Path to See You, a guide to finding professional success without sacrificing personal happiness. By John Fisher, with Gerald Fisher and Wallace Wang. Narrated by Chris Riley. The Tale of Two Wolves. One evening, an old Cherokee told his grandson about a battle that goes on inside people. He said, "My son, the battle is between two wolves inside us all. One is evil. It is anger, envy, jealousy, doubt, sorrow, regret, greed, arrogance, self-pity, guilt, resentment, inferiority, lies, false pride, superiority, and ego. The other is good. It is joy, peace, love, hope, serenity, humility, kindness, benevolence, empathy, generosity, forgiveness, truth, compassion, and faith." The grandson thought about it for a minute and then asked his grandfather, "Which wolf wins?" The old Cherokee simply replied, "The one you feed." Preface. University of San Francisco Commencement Speech, 2018. Thank you very much. My father's commencement speaker was the great Martin Luther King. My father was 20 years old and didn't show up for that talk. So thank you for showing up. Thank you, Dean Davis, President Fitzgerald, my friend Dr. Mark Canice, the rest of the distinguished faculty and invited guests, the families, especially the parents who labored to get here, financially, medically, emotionally. And can I get an amen for the University of San Francisco graduates? I'm honored you graduates would spend such a special moment of your lives with me. Of course, you didn't really have a choice. I was President Fitzgerald's decision. A decision by a man who has lived, studied, and worked all over the world, including Germany, France, Switzerland, Mexico, China, and Kenya, and who decided I was the one for you to listen to before getting your diplomas. Really? This is a question some of those parents who labored to get here may be asking themselves. I mean, come on. There are three other John Fishers to choose from in the Bay Area alone, and all of them are billionaires. If it's any consolation, I don't think President Fitzgerald was simply inspired in his choice. Some of you graduates attended my lectures at USF. I haunted this university for the last decade, banging my fist on chalkboards and desks, pleading with you guys as you started your projects, your companies, your careers, to marry the right person. To me, this was the most important decision in my life with the most effect on future happiness. The most traditionally successful people I know were very often divorced, and they told me sacrificing their families wasn't worth it. Who you marry determines the children you may have. Hold your children up high as your greatest inventions, because to me, they are. I invented something many of you use every day, and it doesn't compare to any day with a happy, healthy child. Don't step on anyone's neck to advance your cause. Be a kind person. Never sue anyone, and try not to get sued. You will sleep better at night. I have never been a party to a lawsuit in my technology career, and amen to that. My wife and I don't put work before our daughter or each other. The engineers in my company, with similar families, and I have been together for most of our professional lives. We don't waste time commuting to offices to look over shoulders because we trust each other. We don't have a holiday party. We don't have each other over for dinner. We get it done, then we see our families. We're like a less good-looking, legal, married-with-children version of the Ocean's 11 team. We build good companies that great companies buy and take around the world as our path of least resistance to contributing to the world. Building smaller companies takes a lot less capital, and therefore a lot less risk, and therefore less of a personal toll. And this works in other industries. Financially, my companies look a lot like Seth Rogen's movies. A strict budget, an acceptably sized audience, although much smaller than a blockbuster. He seems like a pretty happy guy, too. I accepted President Fitzgerald's invitation because I think you can hear the siren call in your lives without it leading to you crashing against the rocks, and I think that's worth sharing. Not everything in Silicon Valley, or any industry or life for that matter, need be portrayed as home runs or strikeouts, success or failure. It's just what you hear about so often because it's what sells newspapers. You can have an idea that doesn't yield a better way to do your job or give rise to a new company but changes your life. What's that worth? Everything, in my book. I agreed to join my primary school board that changed my life. I learned about parenting and education and philanthropy and what motivates people. I learned more about all kinds of things that made me a better person, husband, and father. You could give some time to charities or church groups or political causes and feel the growth that comes with pitching in and doing things for others. It will change you in ways that you cannot foresee, but will enrich your life. Maybe you'll have an idea about attacking global warming. We sure need them at this time in Earth's history. Maybe you'll have an idea about overcoming racial hatred or poverty or truth in news reporting. And maybe you'll pursue none of those things. And yet, except you'll speak from your heart about them to inspire the person you're going to marry. I had the idea to give this speech exactly 7 years ago to the day. I sat in this church right there. It was December 14th, 2012. That was the day all those children were lost in the Sandy Hook shooting. I wondered what someone standing up here would say to us that day. And then I wondered what I would say to you that day. I thought, in an increasingly unrecognizable world, my life trajectory should be recognizable to you. You can do it. You can do what I've done. That is, you can be happy in your career and family. And if you want the world to know your name and you're willing to risk it all to get there, I applaud you, really, and I wish you every success. Just remember my name as your backup plan. I do hope you return to St. Ignatius once in a while, as I have. Although I was not brought up with religious affiliation, empty churches always give me a sense of peace and motivation to do right in this world. I always walked out of this church on a hill feeling better, even on that Sandy Hook day, feeling at the center of things. Salesforce built the greatest skyscraper in the land just 2 miles from here for a reason. It was in San Francisco where my father taught physics at both San Francisco State and Stanford, and often it was easier to get the great physicists of the century to speak in San Francisco. This place stimulates drive and achievement. About 80% of you graduating today do not call San Francisco your home city, but more of you will stay. You understand the feeling I am describing in your years here. San Francisco is a unique city in many ways, and you were lucky to have been here. Bring its vibe wherever you go. Returning again today, I know the opportunity to speak to you in this place and time may be my apex at age 46 for a variety of reasons, including both sets of parents are still relatively happy and healthy and get to be a part of this. My family is here today, My mother-in-law is here who believes all of this, career, family, inspiration, all of it, is due to grand design. My mother believes this is all due to chance. I think it's somewhere in the middle. By the way, this was also the exact opening of my wedding vows. I continued, promising my wife that I would meet her in the middle of our disagreements, whether or not they were about our mothers. And while I think having a loving family creates memorable moments that may result in chemical changes in the brain to make us more creative, I think we should also follow Jack Warner's advice to Einstein, paraphrasing, "You have your theory of relativity, and I have mine. Don't hire a relative." I have a house on a hill now that's built into a cliff, into the rock. And the rain fell, and the floods came, and the winds blew and beat on that house, but it did not fall. Matthew chapter 7, verse 24. And amen to that. The house will not fall, and I remember that to give me strength when bad things happen, which they inevitably do. I am a human, not a house, but still. I see these guys eulogizing their fathers from time to time on CNN, and it's tough not to cry. And my own father is right here. And he is, not was, a great father. He's really a good guy, you know? I aspire to that. I aspire to that first before anything else. And my mother is great. She literally stood in front of me to protect me from the world at times. And my wife? I couldn't have imagined winding up with such a loving and patient and good person in my life like her mother. And it is with such humility that I witness all of this passed down to our little girl. Maybe you'll see her at the reception. She shines. I took the only path to see you along Tiburon Boulevard, where some of the most well-meaning and resourceful people in town can't seem to change daily driving habits to fix the traffic problem. My daughter and I ride an electric tandem bicycle to her school. I may get funny looks from passing drivers, but we try to do our bit to be environmentally correct. No worry. So it is in most towns. How do we do what has to be done to save the planet if we can't even sacrifice a little? My daughter's future depends on a healthy planet, and I will work as hard as I can to make it happen for her and future generations. Love may be the greatest motivation we humans have, greater than success or money. The Union of Concerned Scientists just forecast that nearly 4,400 homes in Marin County will be underwater in less than 30 years because of sea level rise. So we'll have to do something. My generation, yours, we will have to do something. For now, I keep searching for ideas. Think about these things. Ideas will come to you, and act to make this a better planet. Together, we can make it happen. Angry and divided, I fear we cannot. We named our daughter after Emerson, who wrote, "Do not go where the path may lead. Go instead where there is no path, and leave a trail." What a trail to leave, a healthy earth and goodwill among men and women. Your degrees today and your work to come are the means to leave a trail. Your family is another. I will look for you in this church in the years to come as you build and find your happiness. Thank you, USF, and go Dons! Introduction. Our country is not doing well. In the last several years, intense negative emotions such as hate, fear, resentment, and distrust have dominated the headline news. Toss in problems from pandemics and politicians fighting over scientific facts, and we have a divided, often dysfunctional society. This makes effective action to combat global warming, job loss, economic stagnation, virus outbreaks, and other threats next to impossible. To reverse this negative and dangerous trend, we will need a social revolution. People don't necessarily need to love their neighbor, but they should at least respect their neighbors through simple acts of consideration, kindness, and even compassion. When someone receives respect and compassion, life can change dramatically in an instant, for both the recipient and the sender. Caring can spread quickly and be just as contagious as a disease, but in a good way. Ultimately, this spreading of kindness can create a society that can act and work together for the common good. The USA should become the United States of affiliation, not antipathy. This needed social revolution may take time to counteract the negative forces omnipresent today, but that's the reason for this book. This book is my way to help the process along and make the world a better place for everybody. You'll hear about people I personally know or have heard about from the people closest to me. Many of these people are famous and household names, like President Joe Biden, whom I first met when he visited my company for a pre-election fundraiser. These are troubled times, and Biden seems to understand that coming together can accomplish things that disunity will impede or make impossible. It is too soon to know if he has the magic to do this. Others I talk about are like Larry Ellison of Oracle fame, who bought my software company where I worked as an Oracle executive for a time. His domain was not as large as Biden's, but he built a powerful and lasting company. Some have referred to Ellison as a modern-day Genghis Khan, but he has certainly done very well for his children financially. Part of this story includes Nobel Prize winners, along with many ordinary people whose stories deserve to be told because they all showed kindness. Their caring provides plenty of evidence that you don't have to be a bastard to succeed. In fact, being a nice person can actually enhance your chances of success. Kindness and caring only need to start with one person, and it can spread to many others, one person at a time, crossing international borders, and leaping across entire continents and oceans. Caring and kindness can spark the next revolution, because in the end, we are all our brother's keepers. We just need to learn that compassion is never a weakness, but a strength. And the best way to learn how to change the world is to see how others have done it first. Chapter 1. The most important choice in the world. Imagine you're a kid in a candy store. Everywhere you look, there's a treat you'd like to try. Paralyzed with indecision, you can only look from side to side, fearing if you choose one candy, you'll miss out on the opportunity to choose another one. With so many tempting choices, you'd think it should be easy to choose something. After all, if everything looks appealing, how can you possibly lose? Yet there is a way to lose, by being afraid to choose anything. When the candy store owner finally closes the doors, that's when you will realize you wound up getting nothing, despite being surrounded by everything, all because you couldn't make a decision. Don't be a kid in a candy store. You have to make a decision right now that will affect the rest of your life. The longer you procrastinate, the harder your decision will get. You also can't let someone else make this decision for you. It's all on you. Yet many people go through their entire lives without making it. No matter how old you may be, where you live, or what you're currently doing, this decision is vitally important because your life literally depends on it. This decision is simple. When will you decide to take charge of your own life? As straightforward as this question might seem, it's still deceptively difficult. That's why most people avoid answering this question or refuse to acknowledge that it even exists. Yet whether you answer this question or not, your reaction will reveal two important truths. First, are you willing to take responsibility for your life right now? Once you take responsibility for your life, guess what? You now hold the key to the greatest force in the world, which is nothing more than the power of choice. You have shaped your life up until this point, which means you also have the power to shape your life differently now and in the future. Sure, what others do in your life matters, but if you're the only one who can control your life, then you can change your life for the better, no matter who may get in your way or what anyone else might say. Taking responsibility for your life and acknowledging that you're in control automatically removes all excuses. That can be scary, but also empowering, because that means you can change your life for the better at a moment's notice. That's true power that no amount of money can buy. Just as Dorothy in The Wizard of Oz finally learned she had the power to go home at any time, you always have the power to improve your life at any time. Once you acknowledge that you alone hold this power, you'll possess the greatest force in the world, which is the ability to shape the future of your life at any time. If you don't think you have any control over your life, ask yourself what you could do right now that would make your life infinitely worse. Most likely, you can come up with dozens of ways you can make your life worse than it is right now. But if you can make your life worse, that also means you can also choose ways to make your life better. Before you can make your life better, you need to believe that's even an option. Once you know you hold the power to choose between making your life better or making your life worse, you must choose to make your life better. Then you must take action to make your life better. It's that simple. Remember the three C's of life: choices, chances, and changes. Until you make a choice to take a chance, your life will never change. As Eleanor Roosevelt said, "I am who I am today because of the choices I made yesterday." Author and motivational speaker Wayne Dyer said, "When you abandon making choices, you enter the vast world of excuses." Don't make excuses. Start changing your life for the better today. Once you know what you want to change in your life, you can then make a choice. If a choice doesn't quite work out the way you want, you can always make another choice. The power of choice makes you capable of doing anything you want. The most important decision you can ever make is deciding that only you can change your life, and you can keep making new choices at any time until your life turns out the way you like. Will you make mistakes? Of course. Will you run into problems? Yes. Can your choices make your life worse off than if you had done nothing at all? Possibly. However, if you let these fears stop you from trying, you'll never know what you may be missing. There's a whole new life waiting for you, but you need to take that first step based on nothing more than faith that a better world is out there. That's the power of choice. You must recognize that you, and nobody else, holds this power that can literally control your life. Commit to that one decision now, and your life will never be the same again. I guarantee it. Takeaway: acknowledge that you have the power to change your life by making decisions. No matter what your situation may be, you always have the choice to make your life better or worse at each moment in time. The more positive choices you make in your life, the greater impact you'll have on your life in the long run. Portraits in Kindness by Gerald Fisher. Kindness has been around for my entire life. I just wasn't aware of it until I started doing some research about kindness. I found some colleagues were kind while others were not so kind. That's when I noticed that kindness was an admirable attribute, because we all appreciate people who are kind. Clearly, kindness affects us. But I didn't see the bigger picture that kindness could also be contagious and be a major factor in the conduct of business. Not only is it true that you don't have to be a bastard to succeed, but it's also true that if you have a certain kindness in your life and in your spirit, it will affect the people around you and be contagious. Then you'll be even more successful than if you were calculating, nasty, and unkind to others. The example that pops into my mind is a major quarterback for an NFL team who was well known to everyone. During training camp, there was a rookie trying to make the team's center. So he snapped the ball to the star quarterback, but the ball hit his fingers at an awkward angle, and the quarterback winced in pain as the ball flew high in the air. At this point, the whole coaching staff ran out on the field. Half went to see if their star quarterback was seriously injured, and the other half went to berate the rookie center. They were yelling at him, saying, "How can you think of making the team if you snap a football like that? What kind of player are you? If you hurt our quarterback, you will never see the field and you'll be gone by tomorrow morning." At this point, the quarterback came over and said, "No, you're getting it wrong. His was a perfect snap. The fault was mine. I was ill-positioned." The rookie center, as you might guess, was so overwhelmed by what the quarterback did that he said to himself, "I'm going to play for that guy, and I'm going to play my heart out," which is what he did. That was expected from the rookie center. But the additional factor that I hadn't focused on after all these years is that a lot of players witnessed that event. There was a lot of discussion in the clubhouse, a lot of talk amongst the linemen, as the people who support the quarterback, and they were all taken aback at how kind and considerate and generous this guy was, and the whole team just reacted with euphoria. They gave their all for that quarterback. They did things they didn't think they could do. Although it wasn't all entirely due to the generosity of a quarterback, it played a large role in defining that quarterback's position as a leader for the team. Many people have contributed major inventions or founded organizations that have literally changed the world and society for the better. While some of these people have been kind and generous to others, others were not. Ultimately, what matters isn't any admiration or accolades someone receives for their actions, but how those actions affect other people both individually and collectively throughout an entire organization. Back when I was a graduate student, another graduate student named Dick had the idea that our little physics department athletic team could win the all-university intramural athletic championship. Now, the idea that a bunch of physics graduate students could win a sporting competition sounded like mental illness, because the intramural championship had always been won by a fraternity or a club, not by a bunch of graduate students in a physics department. But Dick...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?